Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. It's nice to be here with you, and I want to give a shout out to all our friends of this show. And today, folks, producer Paul and I plan to have a conversation on what seems to be a deep and yet ever-pervasive onslaught of apathy, both culturally and individually, that seems to be going on today. And apathy is a strange bird. Psychology Today calls it the emotionless emotion. I like that a lot. And then Jimmy Buffett, you know, said it even better. He said, "I've been wondering if what I'm feeling is ignorance or apathy." And then he responded, "Hell, I don't know and I don't care." So I don't know if it's ignorance and I don't care if it's apathy. In Psychology Today, I read, quoting, "Paradoxically, what makes the feeling of apathy unique is it's essentially the feeling of not feeling. And doubtless, it seems that at some point in your existence, you've encountered that. We all have. For whenever you feel that something is vital, that something vital is missing from your life, yet lack the motivation or drive to pursue it, you are afflicted with this curious, emotionless emotion." And that is the heart of apathy, a feeling that something vital is missing from your life. You have this, you have nothing worthy of your effort to pursue. There is no anticipation of hope, and without hope, life becomes almost pointless. Viktor Frankl pointed this out in his famous books, Psychological Study, from his time in the Nazi concentration camp, where he clearly stated that it was only hope that kept people going. It was hope that something better would come out of this and something better would end up resulting. Now, all of the drivers of meaning and fulfillment have dissipated to a point of profound disinterest in all that motivated you in the past, and that causes the apathy. Some sort of cause that you're disappointed in, your job, your most meaningful relationships, your worthiness in pursuing something in your own estimation, those seem to somehow dissipate. And in my observation, apathy occurs at least under two conditions. Well, those are the two that we're going to talk about. First is what producer Paul is most intrigued with, and that is a cultural apathy regarding politics and religion. And the second, what I am interested in, is what I'm calling personal apathy, and that is when you just simply get the case of the I don't give a shits. That, you know, I just don't care. And so what we're going to do is we're going to deal with my subject first. So we're going to deal with the second one first. And Paul will certainly have much to add in that. Personally, for me, for a few weeks now, I seem to have been in the doldrums of a bit of apathy. Activities that once inspired me, I find rather unexciting. As a very passionate person, this feeling is rather disconcerting. I just don't care about what I used to care a lot about. I no longer paint. I spend less time writing. And even my volunteer commitments have suffered. I still do what is required. I take care of my job, but I am not currently satisfied by it. I have this feeling inside of me, and it's kind of, fortunately, it had been stronger 2 or 3 weeks ago. It is dissipating, but I've had this feeling that I just want to quit everything. I just don't want to do it, and I don't know what I'd do with myself if I quit everything, but I just have this apathetic sense that it really doesn't matter and that I don't care. And there is something inside of me that tells me I still love these activities, and I'm already in the process of getting back involved with them. and apathy, like other psychological disorders, you know, comes and goes. Fortunately, it doesn't last for a long time, although it can with some people. With me, it doesn't last a long time. So I'm curious, Paul, just to start off with, have you ever experienced any kind of personal apathy where you just, you've got the I don't give a shits?
I don't think so. I don't find myself in that position very often. I've been in depression, deep depression. That's where you feel there's no hope. But where I don't care, I always care.
Even in a depression, you care?
Maybe not. Maybe depression is so all in, it's a black hole. It's hard to see any light at the end of the tunnel. So I think you get very self-absorbed, and you, that's what they say, you got to get out, get outside of yourself to find a way out.
It is a getting outside of yourself, or it maybe it's a getting outside of yourself physically, but emotionally, it's getting deep into yourself.
Yeah, right.
And discovering those things that
the source
that ends up driving you.
But this notion, and I don't disagree with you. I think you're right on. I think it is a cultural phenomenon right now that starts with a lot of people just not caring. I don't give a damn about anything. And I say it starts with being overloaded. We're overloaded with too much information coming at us, too many places, too many people screaming, too many things happening. So maybe we're just tuning it all out. I think it's an overload. As we said once before, I think it's an overload situation and you shut down.
You know, I think it's an overload, and it's perhaps along with that, that goes right alongside with that, is a feeling of impotence.
Yeah. Well,
is that why should I vote? My vote doesn't make a difference. It's only one vote.
Well, I was going to ask you that because I'm listening to you describe your own trouble with this lately, your own wrestling with this lately. And you said something interesting. You said, I'm not sure that some of the things I used to care about matter anymore. And I thought to myself, does it have to matter to be passionate about it? Does anybody have to enjoy it but you?
You know, and that's, you know, with let's take painting, for example.
Painting, perfect example.
That's a perfect example, because when I loved painting, I could really care less what anybody else thought of my painting.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't say I could care less. I mean,
I
care.
You'd be flattered, yeah, if somebody did, but not why you did it.
But that was not the driver. The driver, there was something inside of me that wanted to come out, and I needed to do that through the brush and the scraper and all the other things that I use.
But I don't disagree with you. I think there are a lot of people that are judging their own passions now and saying, oh, that was foolish. That's silly. That doesn't matter. Nobody cares about it but me, so it must not be important.
Yeah. You know, apathy seems to sap so much energy that I end up feeling, and others end up feeling lethargic, listless, and enervated, almost too paralyzed to act, and certainly without the will to do so. How does that notion strike you?
I think that's spot on. I think that's where it mirrors depression. Depression is a deeper hole to get out of, and I think depression is when you lose hope. It isn't that it just doesn't matter anymore. Nothing's going to change. There is no hope of getting out of this. That's when you feel like, oh my goodness, it's just overwhelming. So I think there's a similar, I think they're cousins. Maybe they're the first step on towards depression. But I think powerlessness is part of it. But this notion that your passion had to mean something strikes me as strange.
I'm not a shrink. Although I've been shrunk enough that I
you're shrunken, but you're not a shrink.
I could be, but I feel like there really is a difference. I like that you call them cousins, two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
That apathy and depression are cousins, and that depression can be totally debilitating. But when one is feeling apathetic, I find that we are not depressed as much as we are feeling the lack of a cause or a reason to get involved with life.
No fire.
Yeah. Depression is just, it's energy and emotion sapping where everything is gone. It's, you know, you're too deep into it even to be apathetic.
Yes, right.
That's not even a notion.
Well, because when you're depressed, it's really just about you at that point in time. When you're apathetic, it's about you and something else. Do I want to paint? Do I want to cook? Do I want to get involved? Do I care about the weather? Do I care about any of that stuff? So I think that's where the dividing line is. Do you care about something other than yourself? If you don't, then you're depressed. If you do, then why aren't you excited by the same things anymore? That's what apathy seems to drain your passion.
Why is it that you think you have to care about something else? Why can't you care about yourself?
Oh, I think there's lots of reasons. We don't live, no man's an island. We as much as we are being pushed into being, we work alone, we live alone, we're divorced, we're separated from friends and families and communities. More and more we are isolated, but I don't think that's our natural state.
I wonder if that's a Western or even more than Western, if that's an American ideal, because I was talking with a group last night about sort of universal care and universally mm-hmm. caring for the world and thinking not just me as an individual. And we were talking about where it comes from and that, you know, few things do Americans prize more than individualism.
Absolutely.
That I can do what I want to do.
That, yeah, in our Constitution.
Yeah, I can be whatever I want to be. And that is certainly not Eastern thought. Eastern thought is very communal.
Very much, right. Confucian, right.
But somebody brought up in our book study last night, somebody brought up that's even true in Europe. Hmm. That and my experience in Europe is there is more of a communal feeling in Europe than this individual sort of that it's up to me and I'm the only thing that counts and nothing else in the culture counts but me. And I wonder if we get to that point where nothing else in the culture counts but me, and that's in agreement with what you said earlier,
right.
Is that you have to get outside yourself.
Is this a Western disease then that we're inflicting upon ourselves? We want to be such individuals and so focused on us that we lose any interest in anything other than us?
Well, you know, understanding my ignorance on social science, you know, I can't say that with authority, but my intuition agrees with you that I would pretty much agree with that. You know what apathy reminds me of? Apathy reminds me of nihilism.
Or, very much so, right.
Or nihilism, or however how you want to pronounce
right.
that word, or the, which is the belief that life itself is without meaning. Now, I never understood how nihilists can exist if they think there is no meaning or purpose to life. They're just out doing things for the hell of it, I guess. I'm really not sure
what the driver is. Or it's just personal survival. It's in the moment. What serves you best? I agree. I think we're a very nihilistic or nihilistic society right now. I think we've taken individualism to such an extreme, and I think we're suffering because of it.
We really, well, you know, that's, as we'll get to later in the podcast, that certainly is true in our political arena.
But I'll give you even in a personal arena. So I had a bar years ago. Here's a strange analogy. And I thought it would be for young people who were still single and wanted to get together and meet or date night or whatever. We had tons of people in the 60s and 70s coming down to the bar. This was in an affluent area. Why? Because they're alone. They're divorced. They've lost their other. Or people who were disconnected. They worked at home all day. They were solopreneurs or they were remote workers. They were looking for some place to connect with another human being.
You know, that is so interesting that you would say that. I can give a story on that. When I first attended seminary in 1982, mm-hmm. I believe, and I attended, you know, I call it the seminary with a redundant name. It was called Western Conservative Baptist.
Not the Liberal Baptist.
Not the Liberal Baptist. We were the Conservative Baptists. Although there are indeed Liberal Baptists, but, you know, not many people know of them. But these were young men and women that were raised in this very sort of a fundamentalist view of the world, Christian fundamentalist view of the world. And they viewed, because of the relationship that we have through Jesus and through our relationship with God, that we were the only ones that were capable, the Christians were the only ones that were capable of meaningful relationships, and that people that aren't Christians are not really even capable. I remember this discussion in a, I don't know if it was a philosophy class or whatever, and I was the first to disagree and say, have you ever hung out at a bar? You know, and that, because that's where I came from before that. You know, I mean, I wasn't in the Christian environment until I was 30, and I lived in a bar for 12 years before that, even before I was 21.
And that's where people do form relationships.
And you talk about relationships, and it's not just at the bar drinking. People will take care of people outside the bar. If there's a problem outside the bar, it's you've got this band of like-minded people.
It's Cheers. It's just like the show Cheers. That's the way our bar was. Everybody knew your name. Everybody was glad you came, and they formed friendships in that strange temporary meeting place.
And they form empathy if you're not having a good time.
Yeah, that's true too.
Now the empathy, maybe let me buy you a drink,
right?
And we'll fix it. But there is a caring, and you know, back on this nihilism, because in the midst of apathy, a person most feels like their personal life lacks meaning or purpose, which this leads to a desire to do nothing.
That's the strange one. Talk about that for a second. So I'm lacking something in our modern, you know, self-empowered world, then I'm going to go find it. If I need money, I'm going to go make some. If I need a partner, I'm going to go on Match.com and find one. But if I feel apathetic, my response is, I'm going to do nothing to fill that void.
Because I think the feeling is it won't work. There's such a negative.
Or you just don't. I think it's deeper than that. At some point, you stop caring. I stop caring if I'm alone. I stop caring about causes. I start caring about anything. And it is like a tuning. It's like you become a drone. And I think that's, again, I go back to my only explanation is overload, burnout.
You know, I heard a podcast with Elon Musk, and they were talking about, boy, you know, I don't know the exact name of it, and I'm sorry for that, but it's the universal wage.
Living wage.
The universal living wage.
Yeah.
And
where everybody gets paid a basic.
A basic fundamental salary, yeah. And what Elon Musk's concern was, not so much the difficulty of paying for it, how are we going to afford it, but that people getting it will lack purpose or meaning. They will lack a desire to get better. And he says that's going to be more detrimental to our society than any kind of money we could have possibly lost on it.
Communism in its extreme in Russia and China and elsewhere.
And it was proven to fail, yes.
They paid people just to give them a job, but you didn't do anything, and you didn't feel productive, and you had no say in any of this, so it had no meaning to it. I'll give you an example that had no meaning. This is maybe a too much self-revelation, but this show revels in revelation. I grew up in a pretty affluent, upper middle class neighborhood, and me and many of the kids, money meant nothing to us. We had money. We didn't suffer. So we spent it or crashed cars or did drugs or other sorts of things, because none of it meant anything. It was, we hadn't struggled for it. It had no meaning to us. And I saw too many kids go down a bad path because of that.
And so you think the struggle or the battle to get there is important?
I think it gives it meaning, certainly. It meant a lot to my poor dad, who grew up poor in the Great Depression and never went to college and fought his way to get there. And to us, meant nothing. I remember when I was a kid, my dad tried to give me an allowance. You know, okay, you can take the trash out, I'll give you a dollar. You do this, I give you a dollar. I stopped asking for it. He's like, well, you didn't even come and ask for it. It's like, what do I need a dollar for? I got everything I need, you know? Didn't mean anything to me. And he was just, you know, he thought that was horrible. But it was true. Didn't have any meaning. Came too easy.
You know, once again, Psychology Today offers some informative insight on the nature of this disheartening, emotionless emotion.
Yeah, that's powerful.
That's a great term, emotionless emotion. For all who suffer from, and I'm quoting them, for all who suffer from apathy, what's lost is the fundamental hope that personal happiness or fulfillment is even possible.
And maybe apathy then is the self-protective measure that says, I don't care. I can't get it. I don't care anymore. Maybe that's it. I remember when we'd move a lot. My dad, as he moved up the corporate ladder, we moved all over the country. And I was always the kid teased because I was the new kid in school. And so I built up a self-defense message that said, being different is good. You're going to laugh at me? I don't care. I think it's good to be different. If you don't think you can achieve something, rather than get depressed about it, you console yourself into saying, I don't care if I get it.
Well, you're showing yourself as a child of the 60s because that's,
yeah.
that's what we all believed.
Yeah.
We all believed that we need to be different.
Right.
You know, and furthermore, on this same article in the Psychology Today, they also said either people have ceased to believe in the intrinsic value of the goals that they earlier set for themselves.
That's part of it.
Is this indeed a valuable goal? Or they've lost their faith in their ability to achieve these goals. Mm. And so that creates, why even try?
Yeah, right. Well, that's certainly, we're going to talk later about why most people don't vote. Why bother? Doesn't matter. I can't move the needle. Doesn't count.
So as we conclude this half of the discussion of apathy, what, Paul, is the remedy? How can one overcome this unnerving personal emotionless emotion called apathy? In my opinion, what is required is the same thing that's required in overcoming depression. And we battle this demon by making a choice to do something, even if we don't feel like it.
Clearly, that works. And in my own case, it worked. The doctor would say, just get out and take a walk. I don't want to take a walk. But when I did, I felt better. Go out and get involved again with people. I didn't want to get involved with anybody. I'm too involved in my own self. The minute I did, I forgot about me, and I started to realize there was a whole world out there. I wasn't alone. And then you discover passion again.
Yes, and there is something there, you know, and like you say, when you're not alone, there is something to I don't want to call it group therapy, like a group therapy session, but there is a therapeutic value to belonging to a group, a tribe that is now has really negative connotations in our country, but I believe we all belong to tribes. And that it's okay for us to function within our tribe, just not to think our tribe is any better than any other tribe.
Right.
And to visit or engage with other tribes and learn more about that. I think that's also healthy. So perhaps part of the experience or part of the conclusion is to set things on my calendar of actions that I need to do, even if I don't feel like it, that could overcome this apathy. Because I think it's really critical in order that we must have a purpose in life. And
I think so, but we're both children of the 60s, and that was what we all thought. We didn't believe in mindless work. We didn't believe in...
Do you think it's different, like with millennials today? Do you think
they
are without purpose? Totally. Really, explain that to me.
I think they have, yes and no. We just had somebody in here earlier that says this is the most, they want purpose in their life. They're not just going to work for a company for 20 years. What's it going to do for me? What's it going to do to change the world? They want that passion and purpose. But I think that's because, my own personal view, so many of them lack it. They're looking for others to give me passion and purpose. I'm going to join this company and create a new product. I'm going to save the world and do this. Because they themselves can't find passion and purpose. They're hollow. They're empty.
So
that's scary, but I think that's somewhat true.
Yeah, I think that's a good definition, and I think in wrapping this up, I think it's really twofold, Paul. I think certainly the most value that I get out of life is when I help other people, is when I do things for other people.
When you come back and talk about going to Africa or doing something, or even the way you talked about when you did painting and other things.
Yeah, and you know, my goal for the longest time, and it's still, I can't say it's my goal anymore, but it's my singular goal, but it's part of my ethos, is to help people feel better about themselves.
Right.
If I can do that, I feel like I've contributed, and that is also not only do I help them, but I help myself. I help my own ego, my own self-esteem. I help my own sense of purpose in life by doing something for somebody else. And so perhaps apathy is about, the remedy for apathy is about, what can I do to serve humanity? What can I do to help other people? So let's take a break, and then let's get into your favorite subject. Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And today, producer Paul and I are talking about apathy. I wrote a blog a couple of weeks ago on apathy and talked about some perhaps positive or hopeful aspects of apathy. And today I'm titling this The Dark Side of Apathy. And we just finished talking about personal apathy and the what I call the I don't give a shits, and that I just kind of want to give up and I don't care. But what we want to talk now is Paul's favorite subject.
Cultural.
Well, I don't know if it's his favorite subject or not, but it's in apathy, it certainly is.
It's the one that keeps me from being apathetic. It gets me most worked up.
He gets you the most worked up, yeah. Yeah. No answers,
but I'm
worked up.
Lots of passion.
So tell me, in the midst of our most divisive and heated political debates since Richard Nixon, do you think there is a growing feeling of apathy among many Americans that do not agree with either side? As I feel, very few candidates, they feel as I feel, that very few candidates seeking election or re-election are really not the best we can find. I mean, I look at our candidates for president last year, all 25 of them. Last election.
Last cycle.
And there wasn't a single person in that community of people running for office that I would want to be my president.
But there were two in the group that everybody discounted from the beginning. One on the left and one on the right. Both said, these guys have no chance, and they both made it right down to the end because of they brought out something we hadn't seen in a long time, passion. One was Trump on the right, one was Bernie on the left. Love him or hate him, they both, among their followers, brought up passion, and they brought people back into the fold in both cases who hadn't voted in years.
Isn't it interesting that the passion that they brought, Bernie brought a passion of hope by what we can do to help other people in the country, and Trump brought passion by
anger.
By anger and vitriol and what we can do to make America great again, like America ever quit being great.
Right. They both brought an ideology with them that I thought had disappeared in the 1930s. I'm a big student of history. The last time we saw these two ideologies fight it out, one was socialism, where the group as a whole takes control, and one was authoritarianism, what came to be known as fascism. And they both, I disagree with both philosophies, and I thought they were both dead and buried. They both reared their ugly heads and in my opinion, raised enormous passion on the extremes of both political sides, much to the consternation of those like me in the middle who just felt left out and why bother?
Do you think they raised this passion because they were giving hope to each that felt disenfranchised? Each side felt disenfranchised.
Clearly, they had a similar. They started from a similar position. Something's really wrong. Who's to blame? Bernie said, "It's the big banks and Wall Street and the elites." Trump said, "It's the elites, all right, because they sold you out. They're self-interest, and they're not telling you that it's all these others that are flooding the country: Mexicans, Muslims, Chinese, Californians, all the whatever your long list.
Californians,
yeah, we're in there. I'm telling you, we're part of that kooky others for the rest of the country." And so they both had different people to blame, but they both appealed to the same basic feeling that something has changed. Somebody has screwed us over here.
You know, I've got this nagging feeling that, you can talk about the two passionate politicians, and
right.
And they were there, but
both
for the most part,
both old white guys, by the sense, another weird thing. You know, they were both in many senses mirror images of each other.
Yeah, that's both old white guys. You know what? It gives me the feeling that one of the driving factors in this situation is the personal and national feeling of impotence,
yes,
resulting from that results in apathy regarding the electoral process.
Well, you're speaking to the converted here. Yes, we've had two elections now where the person who won the most votes didn't become president, Bush and Trump. And to their followers, that's a good thing. That's a protection. Otherwise, the big cities, the big states would just dominate every election, and we don't want to have that. Why not? If that's where most people live, this is supposed to be a democracy. And they say, no, it's not. It's a republic. It's representative, and that's somehow different. But I'm with you. I think we came up with this ancient idea, which was put in place, whether you want to accept it or not, as a good thing, as a way to protect people from the mobs.
Tell me about your the information that you gathered somehow about the number of people and the number of, I don't want to necessarily say millennials, but the newer generations' mm-hmm. reluctance to identify with any party.
Well, here's some facts. And I know facts are fungible these days. Everybody has their own set of facts, but these are facts. We had Neil Kelly in here a while ago, who was a registrar in Orange County, which was historically the most Republican of all the California counties, where Richard Nixon came from. In this most recent election cycle, of the registered voters, which is pretty high in this county, it's about 75%. It's not that high in other parts of the country.
Yeah, that is very high.
Very engaged group of electorate. Of those who can vote, 75% of them roughly are registered to vote. But they're broken down into three almost equal groups. As Republicans have lost influence in this county, Democrats haven't gained influence. They've stayed about the same. They're both about 25% of the electorate. 25 to 30% of the electorate, of the registered voters. The other third is this new category we created called decline to state or refuse to state. The pox on both parties. I ain't either of those. I'm not sure what I am, but I ain't those. That's the largest group of registered voters in this county.
What do you think of the ramifications of that? You know, what How does that impact?
It's a breakdown of the old and hopefully a birth of something new. I'm not sure what, but it's certainly a breakdown of the old. The people who feel disenfranchised, the two parties aren't speaking to them. They don't feel connected to either one of those. Now, maybe they don't feel connected to any movement or party. That's my fear. Maybe at least they got engaged enough to vote. But
well, they have, well, you know, to what are they going to attach themselves? Because there is no option. You know, right now there is not a third option.
There
isn't. Their independent party is.
Okay, so I'll give you the same other fact that's shocked me. Pew does a poll, P-E-W, Pew does a poll every year on the American electorate. And for the first time in my lifetime, less than half of the people responded with identifying with any religion anymore. Evangelicals, Christians from the 80s on, were the largest voting bloc in America, followed by Catholics, my group. They represented 60-some percent of Americans, were one of those two categories. For the first time ever, less than 50% of Americans put down any religion. What's your religion? None. None. Does that mean they don't believe in God? I don't know. But they just don't identify with any organized religion anymore.
That to me is very, you know, I would call it apathetic.
Yeah, right. So I think both of those. We're apathetic politically. We're apathetic religiously. We're certainly turned off by groups. We're not turned off by ideology. We'll get embraced. You know, rise of socialism, the rise of authoritarianism. Again, these are new movements that suddenly have newfound passion behind them, but we don't seem to want to. We don't want to join anything anymore. We don't believe in leaders and followers and organizations. We don't want to join companies anymore. We want to work for ourselves.
Once again, the rise of individualism.
Yeah, right. So, okay, I'm all for individualism, but then what's the cause that unites you? What's the group that, the movement that you want to be part of? There is no movement. It's all just scattered. And so part of it is, as you said, the psychology today, the loss of faith in institutions, the loss of faith in what came before us, and then the feeling that, why bother? I can't change anything. Nothing's going to improve.
Yeah, I'm silent because I'm stunned. I'm sort of at a loss here of...
So we're less religious than we've ever been in our history, and we're less politically affiliated than we've ever been, and we cherish this idea of individual entrepreneurship in a way that we never did before. It's all about being your own person. Good. Now what? What's gonna get that person passionate and committed to some sort of change?
That's absolutely essential, and yet the hope. I was just listening to a political podcast. I don't know if you've heard of the guy Ezra Klein.
Oh, sure, famous, yeah.
Yeah, and he does quite good. He's a little bit.
He wrote for Time magazine and other things. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's a you know. Left-leaning.
Sure, he's part of the liberal media, as the people on the right would say. But he's not a screaming...
But he will entertain conversations with people from the right, mm-hmm. and he will entertain, in my opinion, fair conversations.
Yeah, because in my view, Time magazine is about as middle of the road as you could get, so that's where he wrote for Time for years.
And he was just talking about this subject, and his take on this is that we really don't know where we're headed, and that most people voted for Trump, according to him. Maybe not most people, but many, many people voted for Trump just because they wanted to change.
Yes.
They didn't like either party.
Reason they voted for Obama, oddly enough. I'm tired of the traditional politicians who have 20 years track record. Let's try something different. And Obama was radically different, the way he looked, his background, his inexperience. It was a It was an attempt to try something different. And the same many of the same people who voted for Obama voted for Trump. Oddly enough.
Is that switched. Right? Oh, I wasn't aware of that.
Oh, yeah. A lot of the Obama won over a lot of the... For example, Obama won Iowa. That's what shocked everybody. Here's an African-American, half white, half black, from a big city, winning the Iowa primaries. The heart of traditional conservatism, you know, tribalism, you would think. You wouldn't think they'd vote for a black guy for anything. And he won that. That stunned people. But he offered something dramatically different. And I was stunned how many of my friends, even right-wing friends, I'm certainly not a right-wing guy, voted for Trump. I mean, voted for Obama. What the hell? Let's try something different. They were upset what had come before. They were disappointed in Bush. We've tried everything else. Let's try something different. And then when they felt that didn't work out, they went back to anger.
Yeah, yeah. This podcast that I listened to, the man he was doing the podcast with, and I can't recall his name, he's a Democrat, said, you know, the problem with the Democratic Party right now is that there is no agenda. There is no Democratic agenda. You know, there's just tons of issues out there.
And the same thing was true with the Republican Party until Trump came along and redefined it as something else. It ain't what it used to be. Republican Party used to stand for free trade, for traditional family values, and for the spread of democracy around the world. That's Ronald Reagan's philosophy, right? Trump has upended all those things. Screw the rest of the world. We're going to certainly screw free trade and family values. Hey, I sleep with a playmate and a Playboy bunny and a porn star. don't tell me about it. And even ministers say, I don't care what he does personally anymore. They cared when Bill Clinton did it, perhaps correctly so. They don't care what Trump does. Whatever he's created, it isn't what came before. He added a whole new set of values and replaced those traditional Republican balancing the budget. Who cares? That was a big thing for Republicans for years. Instantly, overnight, he said none of those matters, and he brought something new to that party. And I think it's dramatically changed. That's why so many have left. George Will, David Brooks in the New York Times. So many traditional Republicans have left the party because they can't say, well, I don't know what this is, but it ain't my father's Republican.
George
party.
Will left the party? I wasn't familiar with
one
him.
One of the most well-known, respected conservative commentators turned in Republican card. David Brooks, writer for the New York Times, whose mentor was William F. Buckley. They're part of this Never Trumper group that just says, I don't know what happened, but he came in and did a hostile takeover and totally threw out everything we identified with conservatism.
So we talked about remedying personal apathy. When we're talking about cultural apathy, the remedy is we need to have a group, an individual, a party, something that is defining, something that can bring us all together
with
a sense of hope.
Yeah, and a sense of purpose. You talked about the loss of passion and purpose among people. We're seeing it in terms of a country. Who are we? We're going through a debate right now. Are we a country? Is immigration a good thing or a bad thing? I would argue immigration's what made America great. We took all the, give me your tired masses,
and
we'll make something out of them. Now the debate seems to be among many, no, immigration is the exact thing that's ruined America. It's made us too diverse. It's brought in too many groups and others that we don't want. It's diluted down
our white majority.
Anglo-Saxon appearance on everything here. I hate to go there, but it's changed who we... Laura Ingraham did that famous rant a while ago on Fox that, in her coded way, and she said, I travel around the country and I don't recognize this country anymore. Tucker Carlson said, yeah, immigrants are dirty and unclean, and, you know, this image but that's the image of immigrants always. When my Irish immigrants came over in the 1800s, they thought we were dirty and unwashed and uneducated. We were. And later, when my Polish relatives came over in the 1900s, we were dumb and stupid and uneducated. Nobody ever likes immigrants when they come over. But the immigrants come over and bring a passion. They've given up everything. They've fought to get here. Maybe they came here illegally and snuck over. They did everything they could to get here. They come with passion and purpose. And I think that's what invigorates America. But that doesn't seem to be the accepted view of immigration today.
So that seems to be our theme here for an antidote to apathy is passion and purpose.
Yes. And something that unites you and gets you up and going. And you and I grew up in a time when there was lots of passion and purpose.
Maybe oh, my too goodness. Much so in the 60s. Oh, my goodness.
Everybody had passion and purpose. There were a million causes. Feminism, gay rights, environment, stop the war. We were so motivated. The music, you were talking about music in those days, was so passionate. We took it so serious. It was, they were like church hymns when you listened to Crosby, Stills, and Nash or whatever.
It really is true, you know. And I'll tell everybody now, a movie that you have to see is Echo in the Canyon.
Yeah.
And it will just show you the impact of the music on the culture of the day. And
I don't think it moves people in that same way. I don't think I'm just an old crabby guy, but I don't think I listen to my daughter's music, millennial music, and it just seems kind of packed. I look at Marvel superhero movies, and they're clever and they're well done, but they don't lack passion and purpose. They're just pure entertainment, and they're very packaged entertainment.
You know, so that really brings up an interesting point. Do we really? It is apathy. Do we really care?
Yeah.
Do we? You know, I
don't seem to.
I don't care. I want to go to my home. I want to eat my dinner. I want to watch my TV show. Go to a movie. That's okay.
And a movie that doesn't make me think. I'll give you a good example. So my wife and I always argue over TV. I want to watch something educational. She wants to watch mindless brain candy. And I say, why do you watch? She said, I worked hard all day. I just want to turn my mind off. And I'm the opposite. I want to turn my mind on.
My dad was the same way. He wanted to turn his mind off. And I like documentaries and
you and me both. Yeah.
And studies. And my wife, who works, you know, she works 10 to 12 hours a day. So I really appreciate her time. That she does need. She does need a break.
But so my argument to her is, we're filled with escapism all day. Sooner or later, we got to stop escaping, and we got to engage with the world again. My friends who don't want to talk politics, I'm tired, I'm burned out, I can't do anything. Shut up! I don't want to hear it anymore. I demand more out of these things. Me, I want to get more from my movies, more from what I read, more from my conversations, other than just mindless escapism.
I find that very encouraging, Paul. I like that. I like the verb engaged, and that is a direct antonym to apathy.
Yeah, right.
Is apathy is nihilism is
disengaged.
Is total disengagement.
Tune it out. Turn it off.
And the other is to be engaged in some. Purpose that
or passion, whatever it is that turns you on. There's an old 60s term, turn me on. Too many of us are turned off by everything, so we just tune it out and turn it off.
So
turn it on. Get
so
back and,
so the question of the day then is how is that going to happen on a national level, on an individual level?
I can
see us doing it on an individual level. I can see how there are things that I could become more engaged in, and I could become more involved with, and get. And they may be, you know, like painting. You know, how am I helping the world painting? But I'm expressing part of my inner being.
Exactly. You're helping yourself be passionate. So I think yes, it starts with you. Find a passion, find a purpose. A million people talk about that. I think a lot of people don't have a lot of passion or a lot of purpose right now. They're too individualist. They're too down the rabbit hole. They're too much about themselves. And so get out of yourself. That's a thing. How do you get the country to get a passion again? I wish I knew. Somehow we've got to find something that gets us excited. A common purpose. You know, war does that. I don't want to see us go to war, but war has a tendency to do that. When we were attacked after 9/11, that brought people together temporarily.
Oh, gee. I just went to New York and visited the 9/11 memorial just this last weekend. And
we need something to bring us back together. Hopefully not a disaster, but disasters do serve that purpose. Something something that we that unites us again. Right now, we're all individuals. We belong to angry tribes that hate each other, fear each other. I don't know what binds us together right now. That scares me.
That does me as well. And so I guess my encouragement would be, because this is not, you know, the Answer Man show, it's the bring up, but my encouragement would be to discover perhaps discover is as good a verb as I can find, to discover two sorts of passions or purpose. One that is personal.
Yes.
One that will just drive you, and it could be one and the same.
Yeah.
But the other is corporate.
Yes.
That there is something that we are involved in a country, the whole Constitution, the whole country was built around everybody helping everybody and everybody pitching in.
Otherwise there's no country, just a bunch of individuals.
I mean, look at the days of the 1800s and the farmers, and they would come together for
Absolutely.
Barn buildings, and everybody would pitch together and build a barn, and everybody would pitch together and help
that's
a community.
A group of immigrants who all came, who didn't speak the same language, who all came from different countries, but all moved here and went out and moved on to these farms in the Midwest. That's what brought them together and forged them into one common people. We don't have anything that forges us together, that forces us together, binds us together, that unites us. We're only focused on what divides us right now here. All the politics do that. Everything else does that. So find a way, find that which unites us. I'll give you one hopeful thing. This has been I'm going to give you my personal political rant for 2 seconds. What unites us is not the color of our skin or the religion or even the language we speak. We're the only country in the world that you can say that about. What unites us is a belief system. It's a very strange, fragile thing. If you believe if you believe in freedom, you know, liberty, freedom, do your own thing. If you believe in equality, nobody's better than I am, and opportunity, then you're a member of the club. Welcome. And so that's what unites us, but we're focused. We've lost that. We're thinking what unites us is language, race, religion.
Okay, what were those three? Freedom, equality, and...
Opportunity.
And opportunity.
That's what everybody came to this country for. Freedom, because we were seeking something. Opportunity, what we didn't have elsewhere. And equality. Even though I got nothing, I'm as good as the next guy.
You know, a man I listen to a lot, Jordan Peterson, talks about equality of opportunity, that there needs to be, and it's not equality of outcome.
Exactly. That's the problem with socialism, the guaranteed outcome. No, I don't need a guaranteed outcome. I just need give me a chance.
And that's because that's what America is built on, is you do the work, you will get the reward. You don't do the work.
But don't take away my hope that I can't get there because I'm black or I'm poor or I'm,
exactly.
or I'm gay or whatever. Then I'm just going to give up, yeah.
Exactly, because then that takes away equality of opportunity.
Yes, right.
If you disregard, my personal proclivities, race,
whatever gender, the identifiers are. Yeah,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
If you're going to tell me I can't because of something intrinsic, then I'm going to give up. I'm going to give up hope, and. Or I'm going to be angry. One of the two. I'm either going to be say, who cares? Or I'm going to get mad and take to the streets and want to overthrow the system. But I think that's what unites us. And if more politicians, more people thought that way, it reframes the discussion. You know, what you know. Let's find those things. If you disagree with me, tell me what unites us. Focus on those things that bring us together, not those things that tear us apart.
Well, I think you've brought a lot of wisdom to the table here today, Paul.
Thank you. It's something I'm very passionate about.
Well, you know, and that's what keeps you going. And that's what keeps you doing what you're doing, and that's what keeps you living a good life and keeps you satisfied in life. And you've even helped me, even though I've overcome – I've pretty much overcome my apathy, but now I am seeing the things that I can do that actually will give me, and speaking very individually, that will give me pleasure.
Yeah.
And that I am, and there is nothing wrong with pleasure. I'm an Epicurean, you know. And so I, you know, I'm both Stoic and Epicurean,
right.
You know, a Stoic Korean.
Stoic Korean. No, that's a unique thing. Well, that's the beauty of America. Yes, we're individuals. Are you can find and you can reshape these things. You don't have to get fit into a mold. So you can be an individual. Great. But there are times then you got to get out of that, and what binds us together, what brings us together, I don't know.
And generally, when I look at it, the people I know that are in careers or volunteer that or for whatever reason, even AA groups.
Yeah. Right.
That belong to a group that's committed to each other and committed to serving each other and helping each other. It's like with me with Wells of Life. You know, we're committed to a group of people in Africa where we can help thousands of people. That gives me a sense of, you know, even when I have the I don't give a shits, I may not care about the processes and all, but the end results, the compelling cause, the cause is so compelling that I am giving water to thousands and hundreds of thousands of people. That gives me a sense of purpose and a sense that I am doing something valuable, and that will counteract apathy.
Right.
That is what will counteract apathy. It's as you said, a passion, a purpose, could be a calling that mm-hmm. comes in, mm-hmm. and pay attention. And then the biggest thing that I'd want to end with is you do it whether you feel like it or not.
Amen.
And that is,
I don't want to be religious, but amen. Yeah.
But that is so difficult, but that's what we have to do. Whether you feel like it or not, get it going.
And can I'll one quicker thing. People are always telling me to shut up about politics. Everybody tells me to shut up about politics, but I'm passionate about it because I think we're losing something as a country that did make America great, that brought us together. And so I do it whether or not they want me to or not. I have to be sensitive. I can't jam it down everybody's throat. But for me, it's doing it even when others say don't.
Why?
Because it means something to me. And I think it's important. And that's what keeps me going.
Do you think you can make a difference?
Most of the time, no. But I still feel I have to try. That's just the way I am. Otherwise, then I'd give up all hope and I'd be apathetic.
Yeah, and if everybody felt like they didn't make a difference, you do make a difference by contributing, and it takes one.
Yeah, to start
to contribute, and then more contribute. Paul, thank you. This was a fascinating discussion, and you offered really good insights as we pursue a very challenging topic, and I want to thank you for your participation.
Thanks for letting me speak my mind.
To the degree that I let you. And I also want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie. Be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.